Welcome to another episode of Tea Time with Tara. I'm your host, Tara, and today we are delving into a topic that I talk a lot about because it is very near and dear to my heart. We will be discussing ADHD, but rather than talking about the usual symptoms and treatments, we're going to be exploring the everyday realities, the unspoken challenges, and the unexpected joys of living with ADHD. Joining me is Emma Magenta, a life coach who has not only navigated her own ADHD journey, but also guides others through theirs. Emma brings a wealth of knowledge, personal insight, and a refreshing perspective on how ADHD affects women differently. So whether you're familiar with ADHD or just curious, I hope that this episode is enlightening, inspiring, and helps to deepen your understanding of this condition. So you know the drill. Grab your favorite mug, find your coziest spot, and let's get comfortable. Hi, Emma. Welcome to Tea Time with Tara.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk to you.
I'm really excited to share this with everybody. I feel like this is going to be awesome. So I guess we can just get started with you telling the listeners about what you do.
Okay. So I am a life coach for ADHD women.
I was going to say, what does that entail?
What does that mean? What does that entail? Yeah. So I help women in a couple of different ways. I work with people one-on-one. I coach them, and I also have a group, like a group kind of a program that I offer. And the group program, it's specifically aimed at helping ADHDers with procrastination, because I feel like that is one of the biggest, most obvious kind of roadblocks in how we see ourselves and how we live our lives. So so that's like the heart of what I do.
Okay.
One-on-one work and group coaching.
Well, I love that you said us, like we, because you have ADHD, and I feel like
I am.
That is so important for someone to who gets it to be the person giving the support.
Yeah. I actually was just talking to a colleague of mine recently who is an ADHD coach as well and is ADHD herself. And she was like, I really don't understand how I'm sure they're out there. I'm sure there are non-ADHD having ADHD coaches out there, but I just don't even understand how you would do it. Like, I think there's something about living in an ADHD brain yourself, having an ADHD brain yourself. And then all the experiences that we have all throughout our lives were from when we are very small children. We don't behave in the way that neurotypical kids do. And so from really the earliest parts of our lives, we are receiving feedback from the people around us that the stuff we're doing is weird or it doesn't align with expectations.
Yes.
So I feel like I think it would be hard for a non-ADHDer to understand what it's like, both the experience that ADHDers have in the moment, and then what it's like to have a lifetime of ADHD experiences behind them.
Totally. I couldn't agree more. I was actually talking about Erin, who is the person who connected me with you. I was just talking about that with her yesterday, because we have kids that are in school together, and our little ones, it's like this trying to be a parent, for example, with ADHD and just existing in our own minds is exhausting enough. But then to try and raise a whole another human being or human beings is this whole other experience, and how somebody can be like, oh yeah, you know, it's fine. You just need to do this or that. And it's like, no, you don't understand like what it's like to live in here. Like, what it's like to exist in this, because I don't think that you would say, oh, everybody has a little bit of ADHD, if you actually understood what that existence was like.
That is the classic comment that you just want to put an ice pick through your eye, or maybe through their eye.
Yeah.
When somebody says something like that, right? Yeah. I don't have kids, but of course, everybody, like most of my friends do, my sisters do, I'm an auntie. I really would have to sit here and count up how many nieces and nephews I have now, because now the nieces and nephews have started to have babies. So now I've got grandnieces and nephews.
Wow.
I know. Oopsie. So, So I do a fair amount of like kind of childcare on the side, and I am so blown away by the ADHD moms I know, because oftentimes their kids are neurodivergent as well. Yes. And so then you've got a neurodivergent parent trying to help a neurodivergent kid. And one of the big things that I think I've learned just by watching my neurodivergent friends and how they deal with their kids, and also talking to my clients, and also learning from my colleagues who work with neurodivergent moms and kids, one of the big things I've learned is that ADHD families really kind of have to throw out, they have to be okay with just throwing out a lot of the conventional ideas about what a family is supposed to look like, how a family is supposed to function, what rules or quote unquote boundaries are supposed to be in place, what appropriate child, I don't know how the heck I did that. So for those who are listening, we're just talking on this app that we're using to record the podcast, and a bunch of like
balloons
just flew up past my screen. So that's an ADHD whatever right there. But yeah, I think ADHD families have to completely reorient their ideas about what it is like to raise a family. Like we have to really allow ourselves to think differently, to make different choices, and to not be influenced by the prevailing cultural norms that often don't work for us.
Yes. Yeah. The cultural norms, that's a big one. And I feel like my son has a diagnosis of ADHD. And so I finally, after a very long time, I think I've talked about that a little bit on previous episodes, just what that was like, getting him a diagnosis. But then my daughter, I don't want to push it, you know, because both of her parents have ADHD. The odds are in her favor. And there are some things where I'm like, she's still a little young, so we'll see how much of it is just being a young kid and not having control of her emotions, for example, and how much of it is ADHD, if that ends up being what happens, which is most likely the case. But like those things, the boundaries, the what's conventional, what's not, like what works, what doesn't. I feel like now that I just recently got my diagnosis, I feel like it's making me a better mom, because I get it better, because I'm really researching it and in it. Like my son got diagnosed, and then a year or two later I got diagnosed. And so it was just finally it wasn't so much the diagnosis as much as it was, okay, what is this and what do I do about it?
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like the label, it doesn't matter what it is. I just need to know how to help my kid, and now how to exist with this.
Yeah. I bet your listeners would love to know, not to put you on the spot, but what's an example? I just love to hear this kind of thing. What's an example of a conventional parenting norm that you have learned does not work for your family, does not work for your kid, or maybe for you?
Well, for one, I have no idea what conventional parenting is. I mean, I wouldn't even know where to begin, you know? Yeah. But I do feel like one of the things that I started to notice, because I relatively recently introduced my daughter and my boyfriend. And so now he's like, we eased him into it, but now he comes and just hangs out and does like life with us.
Yeah.
And I think that when you said boundaries, I was like, oh yeah, that's not a thing here with like physical space. And my son is like a don't touch me kind of a physical kid, person. Yeah. And my daughter is the complete opposite. Like I need to be on
snuggle. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, that, and like, I don't know how much of this is just ADHD and how much of this is just me being an unconventional parent, but like I'm like, okay, go get your pajamas on, and she'll strip right in front of whoever and just run around naked. Yeah. And like, it's like, whatever. She's always been kind of a nudist and I've just kind of let her do it. So it's not worth the battle to me. Like,
yeah,
I don't feel like, you know, there's nothing wrong with being naked. That's your body and your home and you're safe. So why not? So,
yeah, if that's what works for you, like if that's what works for you guys, right? Yeah. One of the big things that I see people talking sometimes, or that I hear people talking about when I'm in circles, like whether I'm online and I'm in some kind of a Facebook group or something like that, or if I'm in a coffee shop or something like that, I'll often hear people who I kind of feel like are doing more conventional parenting techniques, they'll talk about consequences, right? And one of the big phrases that comes up is natural consequences and how kids learn that way. Mm. And I always feel like that is that whole approach to parenting will allow the kid to experience the natural consequence and then that'll teach them, right? I feel like that is an example of an approach to parenting an ADHD kid that doesn't necessarily work for an ADHD kid, because the ADHD kid, like say it's about wearing a jacket. Well, if you don't wear your jacket, you're really cold and that's the consequence. And that way you learn to bring your jacket, right? But an ADHD kid is not like consciously making the choice not to wear the jacket. And they, oftentimes they don't quite, like, their brain doesn't work in the linear fashion that would allow them to connect to the previous time when they went outside and they were cold and they didn't have their jacket. They're not going to be able to pull that up to the top of their minds the next time they're leaving their house. So, I don't know if that's been your experience with raising an ADHD kid, but it's like, those natural consequences do not necessarily work for ADHD parenting.
They don't at all. And actually, it's still a big challenge, because it's one of those things where, now, my son lives with my mom. I don't think I told my listeners that, but he lives with my mom. We're trying something different because it's just been, we don't know what to do anymore. And it's not like he's not a bad kid. It's just that I cannot give him what he needs, at least at this point in time. And so we're trying to see if she can figure it out, and we're co-parenting. So I'm co-parenting with my mom, and we are still trying to figure out, okay, well, what is going to motivate him? Well, we know that if he wants to go out, for example, he wants to go out, he is motivated by that because he will not shut the hell up about it. If he wants to go out, what time is it? When are we going? I want to go. And so, okay, you want to go out? Well, you can't go out until this is done. And so it's like, it's that kind of thing that we have, at least with schoolwork to an extent, we figured out with him, and that seems to be sort of working, but those natural consequences of you're going to fail a class if you don't do this. Well,
that doesn't speak to him.
No, not even a little bit. So
I think that is such a great example. I'm sure that took so much courage for you to make that decision to co-parent with your mom like that. I just want to honor you for that.
Thanks.
That sounds freaking hard.
I
and
cried
that's a
lot.
Great example.
I cried a lot. So it was not an easy choice.
No. But I feel like that's a great example of how neurodivergent families often, they look different than conventional families do, right? You, like, when your kid needs different things and has a different, I think I may have spoken to you about this when we first met. I talked about the idea of a spiky skill set.
Yes.
Right? When your kid has a spiky skill set, and when you have a spiky skill set, the sort of like very conventional, traditional arrangements of a mommy and a daddy and 2.5 children and the doggy and the white picket fence and everybody sits at the table and has a sit down breakfast and then gets on the school bus in an orderly way and goes to school and daddy grabs his briefcase and he goes off and mommy does whatever. Mommy puts on a ruffled, apron and then does housework. Like, that's not the way that modern life works for most people. And it actually doesn't work. It really doesn't work for neurodivergent families. Yeah. Right. So I just feel like what you're doing with your mom is such a great example of, yeah, it's not always going to look in the traditional way. And we have to make room for that in our hearts and in our understanding.
It's very difficult, but I mean, I'm very lucky that I have my mom's support, and as well as my stepdad. The fact that they, I mean, obviously they love my kids, but like the fact that they love us all so much that they are willing to take that on and support and work together and go through all the ugly parts of it. And because it's just not easy. Co-parenting with anybody is not easy.
No.
And, like you said, letting go of that, the conventional part of it where I'm like, I'm his mom. He's supposed to be with me. And then having to look at myself and say, you know what? Like, sometimes I don't want to be here. Like, I get it. I have to figure my shit out and I have to get my house under control just for his sister and for myself even. But like, so I can respect and appreciate that he needs something different and I'm not giving him that. And it's not.
You have your own spiky skill set.
Yeah.
I would love to kind of define that a little bit for your audience,
for
the people that are listening. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So a spiky skill set, what I mean by that is usually for most people, there's a set of expectations about what they can do at certain ages or phases in their lives, right? Like when you're an adult, you're supposed to be capable of feeding yourself, doing your laundry, paying your taxes, balancing your checkbook, holding down a job, et cetera, caring for your kids, all this stuff, right? And the expectation is that all of those skills will be dialed in. And for a neurodivergent person and for an ADHD person in particular, what you get more is more this spiky skills profile where we will be really ultra competent in certain parts of our lives. We will actually surpass expectations. Mm-hmm. And then there's other parts of our lives or other times when we cannot meet those expectations or there's certain things that most people can do that are just really hard for us. So a great example of a spiky skills profile might be like somebody who, I'll just talk about myself, right? I'm a very empathetic person. I love public speaking. I'm just talking about some of the things here that I'm really good at, mm-hmm. right? These things make me a really good coach, right? I'm really good at listening. I'm really good at distilling the heart of a matter for somebody. I'm fairly artistic. I do all my own graphics for my own business, right? There's a lot of things that I'm good at. And then there's things that I struggle with unbelievably. It used to be really hard for me to feed myself. Now I've really gotten a hold on that, but that historically was a real problem for me for most of my life.
Yeah.
I was never a person that could keep a calendar or remember birthdays. And that's something that's like a skill that I've had to, that I've had to build as a grown up. It's usually historically been really hard for me to keep my house clean. And now I have a system in place for that. It's hard for me to do laundry. I have a system for that now too, which is that my husband does it. that's the best kind of system.
Yeah.
You have your husband do it. So all of these are examples, like all of these things are that, so that's a spiky skills profile, right? Mm-hmm. On the one hand, I can run a business. My previous business before this one, I had like 30 people that worked for me. So I can found a business.
Yes.
I can be responsible for 30 people. I can do all this stuff. I can show up and I can be an amazing coach, and yet I can't do my laundry. It's not easy for me to do my laundry, right? So that's an example of spiky skills. And one of the big things I've done for myself and that I do for my clients, one of the things I've learned to do for myself through coaching and that I do for my clients is I help them get these really important life skills that are hard for them. I help to bring those, to create systems that bring those life skills up,
right?
So that they have a system in place so that they're not like killing it at work. And then at home, the whole place is a disaster and they can't even get their laundry done.
I relate to that part. When I was like, I will volunteer myself as tribute here. Laundry is a problem. I've talked about that many times on my podcast already about like, I'm really trying, but whatever I'm doing is just not working. And so I know, for example, I do well with a buddy system. And so when my
body doubling or co-working.
Yes, yep. Exactly. When my boyfriend was here yesterday, he was watching a movie with my daughter and I brought the laundry out to the dining room table and started folding it so that I was near them. I was with them, but I was behind them. They could talk to me and I was doing what I needed to do. And I got a bunch of laundry folded. So the it's still a work in progress. That's not necessarily the system that's going to work because that doesn't always happen. But like finding those things, like I think we spoke previously about, I also struggle with feeding myself. And so I have accepted that I need to just either I'm going to spend a ton of money because I am going to be ordering takeout all the time, which I had a moment a couple of months ago where I was like, holy shit, I spent $1,000 on takeout this past month. That is insane. There's no reason for that. I have so much food in my house. Why am I doing this? And so I started to say, you know what? Okay, I need to order those frozen meals, for example, or meal kits. They're hit or miss, like, because I get all the food, but I still have to prepare it.
Oh my God. I have so much.
Like I have to chop it and stand there and clean up and all the other stuff.
It's only solving one problem.
Yes. Yeah.
May I speak to this a little
bit? Yes, please.
You touched on such a thing for me. So here's the deal. This is the thing I love to say. When people with ADHD have a problem, they tend to think of their problems as apples when really their problems are pomegranates. What I mean by that is they look at a problem like feeding myself and they see it as kind of a singular kind of a problem. Mm-hmm. And if I could just get this one fix, then that would solve the food problem, right? When really any problem that an ADHDer has, really any problem that any human being has, to tell the truth, it's usually a pomegranate. There are multiple sub problems tucked inside the bigger problem.
Yes.
And what you have to do is crack it open and look at the sub problems. So food is a great example because there are so many sub problems involved in feeding yourself.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So just to kind of do it, just off the top of my head, there's the sub problem of meal planning. Like what am I going to, like what food do I want to prepare this week? If that's what you do, there's the sub problem of getting groceries into the house. There's the problem of prepping the meals. Some of us have problem eating the meals. Like if certain foods sometimes appeal to you and certain foods do not, then you've got an issue with safe foods, unsafe food. There's the problem of cleaning up from the meals. There's the problem of what are you going to do with the shit left over from last week? I hope it's okay that I curse on the show.
I mean, I all the time.
There's the problem of like, what am I going to do with the shit left over from last week in my fridge that I didn't eat, with a rotting cucumber in the bottom of my fridge? There's actually an enormous number of sub problems built into the problem of food.
Yeah.
So one of the issues with something like a meal kit is that it only solves one. It solves a couple of problems for most of us. It solves the meal planning problem.
There go the balloons again.
There go the balloons. I don't know how this is happening, but I love it. It makes our podcast seem so joyful. It solves the meal planning problem because they'll send you, it's a meal, and it solves the groceries problem, getting the food into the house. Mm-hmm. But it does not solve any of the other problems. Mm-hmm. The other problems, meal prep, you usually still have to pick the meals, so that can be a problem. It doesn't solve, of course, the cleanup problem. It doesn't solve the, like, there's a lot of problems that it doesn't solve. Mm-hmm. So that's why a meal kit is not always an answer for an ADHDer when it comes to food.
Yep. Yeah, it's so true. I've tried to explain that to people before. And then when we spoke recently, the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, I've been saying this, because I didn't realize, like, for me, even going to the grocery store, is sensory overload for me. And so where my boyfriend, like, we have been comparing notes so lately about, like, he's like, oh yeah, I love to go to the grocery store. I find it relaxing. And I just like to go and do that. And so we went grocery shopping because we threw a New Year's party. And I was like, get me the fuck out of here. This is too much. Yeah. And he was just like, la-di-da, I love this. I love food. Yeah. I love food too. I love to eat. So it's not about the food, like getting the food. It's about, it's not about eating the food. It's about all the other parts of it. And so, yeah, sensory overload. I am like, I will do anything to not have to go grocery shopping.
Yeah. I don't go to the grocery store. Yeah. So this is so fascinating, right? So another really key principle that, that guides my work as a coach is this idea that everybody's pomegranate is different. Mm-hmm. So the strategies that are going to work for each individual person in terms of what is going to make their ADHD work, mm-hmm. it's as individual as what people like in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. And I use that, I know that's, I hope that doesn't feel like a creepy example, but I use that because
makes sense.
it's on the level of your nervous system. Mm-hmm. It is on the level of your nervous system, right? It's a very deeply ingrained aspect of your persona, of who you are as a person.
Yes.
What strategies are going to work for you mm-hmm. in terms of how you're going to solve a problem like this, right? So it really doesn't make a lot of sense. Like one thing that can be really, really aggravating when you're an ADHD person and you're trying to talk to a neurotypical person or even another ADHDer who found the thing that works for their nervous system, right? The thing that's frustrating is that you are going to have to come up with a strategy for this mm-hmm. that is utterly individual to you.
Yes.
That takes into account the fact that you cannot go to the grocery store, mm-hmm. that does not work for you. Like my guess is when you go to the grocery store, it's really hard to get things done. And then for the rest of the day, you're shot or you have to like go home and take a nap.
Yeah. Yeah. I am so, like you said, shot from it. I'm just like, I can't, I want to be alone. I don't want to see.
Yeah.
Or do anything. Like I just, and I have a 5-year-old, so it's not like I could really do that. Like she's always on me. Even when my son was living with me, he wanted to be alone because that was what he needed.
So it's like, for example, here's what I do with groceries. The way that my husband and I handle food, he is also a neurodivergent person. The way that we handle it, is, we don't go into the grocery store. We order the groceries. And in fact, so I do the meal planning. I plan what we're going to eat because I'm the one that does most of the cooking. Mm-hmm. I plan what we eat. I make the grocery list. I give the grocery list to him. He orders the groceries online because that is comfortable for him. That drives me crazy and takes me hours to do it.
Yeah.
Whereas when he does it, it takes way less time. And also we spend way less money.
Right.
I always pick the most expensive thing. And then I go and pick the groceries up so that I don't have to go into the grocery store. And then I'm usually the one that cooks. And the way that I handle the food is I will make enough food for 2 nights. And then we mm-hmm. eat leftovers every second night. That's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
So that's a system that works for me and my husband. But that doesn't mean that that's going to work for any other ADHD person.
Right.
So another thing I always say in my practice is that this is why hacks, ADHD hacks, oftentimes don't really work. And it's because it is so individual and particular. Like you, like what's going to work for me is not necessarily going to work for you, right? Yeah. I can't give you a list. Like I can give you a list of my hacks,
right?
Right. But that's like me giving somebody a list of like what I like in the bedroom and expecting that to work for them.
Right, exactly. Right.
It's like, that's not how any of this works. That's not how any of this works.
Yep. I mean, I relate to all of what you just said about the grocery shopping thing. A lot of things like I didn't realize. And another reason why I think that it's hitting me so hard now is because it wasn't the diagnosis. It was the fact that I just got separated from my husband and we were living together and had systems in place for how we did things.
I remember this. Yeah.
And so it just so happens that this is all kind of happening around the same time. And so now I don't have the person who also loves to go to the grocery store, and that's like his thing. He loves to cook food and prepare food, and he likes to fold laundry, which are all things that actually my boyfriend, my current boyfriend, also loves to do. So it's perfect. It's just like,
that's amazing.
So like,
you should teach a freaking class, right? You should be a coach.
How to find a partner that does all the things that you can't do. Right?
Exactly. That fills in all the gaps. I love it.
So, but like, I really, it's like trying to figure out all of that stuff all over again. And like, my boyfriend and I don't live together. We've been together, long enough that we're starting to talk about it. And now I'm like, I cannot wait for us to live together, because you are going to do all the things that I hate
that
doing.
Like, yes, that I need to do. So funny. You know, it's interesting. I was listening to your podcast just to prep to be on your show. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I have been struck by is how you have been through so much. You are in such a journey of growing as a person. One of the things I'm kind of curious about, I hope it's okay if I ask you a question.
Of course, ask away.
I'm kind of curious about how your ADHD diagnosis journey has, how it is reflected in, or what the similarities or differences are between that and your autoimmune condition diagnosis, because you've spoken about that on your show as well. And I feel like both of those kind of diagnoses, they just kind of make you start thinking and reflecting on what's going on in your life. And I wonder what it's been like for you to have both of those diagnoses in such a short period of time.
So I actually just signed up for therapy again, because I've been in and out of therapy for most of my life. I started going to therapy when I was a preteen. I've had quite a journey. So, from a very, very young age. And so I was processing lots of trauma before, and trauma and anxiety it was so debilitating. And that's another piece of this too, where it was so severe that I was struggling with having healthy relationships, having healthy friendships, being a mom, work, everything. That really consumed my life so much. That once I can't say that I don't think that you ever are really healed from the trauma, but I know for a fact that it's become much more manageable for me, and I kind of know what things trigger me, and sometimes I can kind of manage how I respond more easily. And so now that that's kind of like on the back burner, and I'm like, okay, like I'm good with that part of it, that's when I was like, all this other stuff is still an issue for me. Like there's all this other stuff going on. And so I was finally able to focus on getting myself that ADHD diagnosis, for example. And again, it's not about, oh, well, now I'm diagnosed with ADHD. That's going to define me. It's what do I do about all these things? Like now, if that diagnosis is what helps me to get help with these things, that's what matters to me. And so there's that. And then, so that was my ADHD diagnosis was early, was it last year? It was the year before, 2022. So earlier in 2022, I had that. And then I think that having a stressful life happened, and that I had been having symptoms of like autoimmune type symptoms sporadically since my early 20s, a little earlier than that, because I had my first ever psoriasis outbreak when I was 18, and it was all of a sudden, boom, my whole body is covered in psoriasis, like out of nowhere. And it's the kind of psoriasis that I have is called guttate psoriasis, and so it's little spots all over my body. And how it affects my face, for example, is that it feels like my face is on fire, like really severe windburn. And so I got the psoriasis under control, but then I would have like little outbreaks of it and flare-ups of it. And but it was manageable. And then the stress, I think it was my job and parenting, being a single parent and living on my own and trying to manage everything for the first time in a very long time, just kind of put me over the edge early last year. And that's when all of the symptoms like that I was having with the autoimmune issues happened all at once. Yeah. And in a way, I'm glad because now at least I know what it is.
Yeah.
And I can start to get treatment for it, because before it was, I was having these random knee flare-ups where it would be painful for me to walk like out of nowhere and my knee would blow up and it would, and it was like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes my hip would hurt too. And I always had back pain. And so all of that got finally rolled into that. And also like food sensitivities and all kinds of stuff. Yeah. Everything kind of makes sense under those two umbrellas now.
Yeah.
And the more I learned about it, the more I have also learned that trauma and ADHD and autoimmune diseases are all comorbidities. Mm-hmm. And so there's this part of me now that is on top of just trying to figure out life with this massive thing that happened last year where it's like, yes, all of a sudden, it wasn't like all of a sudden I had psoriatic arthritis. It was all of a sudden it got really bad.
Yeah.
And so that's when I finally, after 16 years of trying to figure out what the hell was going on, got that diagnosis. And so now I can, and now it's so bad that my body is just like constantly in a flare up. Whereas before it was like once every 6 months or even less than that sometimes, depending on how stressed out I was, I guess.
Yeah.
Now it's here and it's here to stay. And so I am almost like mourning life as it used to be in a way, because my life is not ever going to be the way it was. My body is just not able to go backwards. And like I had my rheumatologist appointment yesterday. I have a quarterly appointment, and I sat on the bed in the office, the table in the office, and I just kind of like readjusted myself, and I sit always with my legs crossed, like a kid sitting in the circle, and no matter where I am, crisscross applesauce. Yeah. And like right now I'm sitting with my knee up on my, you can't see that because of the view, but like,
I saw it actually I saw it when I joined the call, and I was like, oh, she's just like me.
Yeah. Yep, it's so crazy.
I often actually, like, I have a bench. I will often sit cross-legged on my bench. Yeah.
Yep. So, I'm mourning that, you know, and I am also, then I'm like, oh, wow. So all of this is because of trauma, most likely. Mm-hmm. And kind of coming to terms with that, even though like I have learned to manage my trauma, but still kind of being like, wow, for the first time in my life, I'm not in survival mode.
Yeah.
I am not just trying to get by. Now I am stable in my career. I feel like my life is just kind of like, okay,
it's steady,
other than my health, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, it's kind of been this circular thing where I'm like, I wish that I knew what I had when I had it, as far as with my body. Mm-hmm. And I also am like, okay, now what do I do about this? This feels so overwhelming that I almost feel like my life is unmanageable.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So I hope that answered that, I think.
Yeah, it did. It totally did. I have a couple of thoughts about it. Can I share them with you? Is
totally.
That okay?
Yes. Yeah.
One thought is, again, I just want to honor the fact that, that is a lot for any one person, for any organism to endure, right?
Yeah.
And I also want to speak to the fact that, so I don't know that much about trauma and autoimmune issues. Those two, it sounds like those two are hooked up, which would make sense. That's stress, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this, but ADHD actually, it doesn't come from trauma. You know that part, right?
Right. Yeah.
That it's more your genes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I always want to say that
comorbidities usually.
Exactly. I always want to make sure I say that, because there's a certain Some people out there are make the argument that ADHD is the result of trauma. There's this one doctor who's always saying that, and it's not, the research does not back that up at all. And the problem with that is that when people with ADHD think that their ADHD is the result of trauma, then they start trying to solve the trauma problem, which is a totally different set of strategies than the ADHD issue. Right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, so one of the things though about ADHD and autoimmune stuff that comes to my mind is just the way that, both of them involve, like, if you're going to address both of those things, they both involve, how can I put this? Being open and receptive to the fact that we probably need way more rest and way more TLC than we want to need. Mm. Like, I think a lot of us, we have this idea that we shouldn't have needs.
Right.
Right. Especially as, like, when you're a mom.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a mom, but I know this to be true from all the other moms I've known and loved and having a mom and loving moms. Mm-hmm. The sort of like dominant cultural vibe about moms is they're not supposed to have needs.
Right.
Your kids' needs come first. As a woman, you're not supposed to have needs. You're supposed to just be like this ornamental creature, right? And I feel like one of the things that happened for me, not right away, it has taken me many years. Like, in fact, I would not be surprised if I spend the rest of my life coming to terms with my neurodivergence and coming to terms with my own chronic health issues, right? I'm going to be living in this body and working on loving it and giving it what it needs for the rest of my life, right?
Yep.
And I feel like that shift in orientation toward loving myself, giving my body more of what it needed than I thought was acceptable, right? Yeah. Has been a big part of my journey. And I've had to evolve a practice over many years of being like, okay, what does she need? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, how can I give her not just the paltry little amount that I think she's worthy of, or I think it's okay for her to need? How can I give her more than that? How can I give her an absolute surplus of rest? How can I nap more? How can I take more time off? How can I allow myself to eat more? Because I used to have a very restrictive kind of set of food rules. How can I give her more of the kind of exercise or movement that she wants? How can I give her, and by her, I mean myself, right? Mm-hmm. How can I give myself more satisfying friendships? How can I upgrade the relationships that I have so that they feel good? And have the confidence to let relationships that actually don't feel very good, to let those kind of fall away.
Yes.
And that is really sort of been the heart of my journey. Like, I always say that my North Star in my coaching is self-love.
Yeah.
And that sounds really glib and pretty to say, but it's actually, I'm going to curse again, it's a deadly fucking serious business.
Yes.
This business of self-love. It is, it's the difference between a life where you are thriving and able to be there for your kids and able to offer the world your gifts, and a life of illness, unhappiness, right? It's such a big fucking deal. So that has kind of been the focus of my journey through this period of time in my life when I've been diagnosed with it, sort of coming to terms with it, coming to terms with this 47-year-old body that, like, needs more than I think it should need.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like definitely as women, I think that it's a societal thing that we struggle with that in general. And I relate to that so much, that self-love part, because, you know, I'm learning, I have all this guilt, and I've had a lot of guilt, especially again with, you know, now with my son going and living with my mom, like, there's a lot of guilt there, and what I could have done, should have done, the fact that I haven't been able to give him what he needs in whatever way, all of that feels like shit. And yeah. and it's really hard to not dwell on that and to just say, okay, like, this is what it is. This is the way that I am. This is the way that he is. This is the way that life is. And, mm-hmm. and not just accepting it, but really being okay with it and acknowledging that just because maybe I struggle with the laundry. So I struggle with tidiness, for example, mm-hmm. Doesn't make me a bad mom. It doesn't make me a bad person.
No.
Like those kinds of things that I really like take on so much more onto myself because of that, like that anger and frustration with myself, or even feeling like not worthy of, yeah. of things, of love and, being in, so there's the trauma and the ADHD mm-hmm. and all the things, but mm-hmm. being in a healthy relationship, for example, for the first time, like in my life, mm-hmm. Allowing myself to have a healthy relationship, because it wasn't that I always had bad partners or unhealthy mm-hmm. partners. It was where I was at in my life and where they were at in their lives and being able to meet each other in yeah. that way. Yeah. Some, yes, they were abusive, and that's a whole episode that I've already recorded. but like being with somebody and letting him love me.
Yeah.
As I am, even the not good parts where,
yeah.
you know, I lose my shit because of the emotional dysregulation part of it. And sometimes yeah. I'm just like, I can't right now. And I just need to like go into a little cave, hole yeah. for a little yeah. bit. And, yeah. and then, okay, now I can think again, because I got emotionally overwhelmed or whatever
yes.
the case is. And
yeah,
he's starting to accept that and understand that like that. It might frustrate him because he's just like, well, why can't we just talk about this?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, nope, can't do it. And it's not about like, oh, I'm going to check out of my entire relationship. It's just like, for whatever reason, whatever state of mind I'm in sometimes,
yeah.
I can't. And like having somebody being willing to do that
yeah.
has been like
huge.
A whole part of loving myself even, because
yeah.
it has shown me like, wow, I do deserve to be loved, and I am worthy of that. And look at all the things that I have to offer, because he reminds me of all the things that I have to offer all the time. And like yeah. not holding all the fact that I can't fold my laundry against me or like yeah. whatever yeah. it is. Like, he's just like, no, you've got this, we've got this.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's a partner or friends or whatever works for whoever, it's about finding your tribe, however that looks, and
yeah.
and recognizing that we do need help too.
Yeah. Like
that part of loving yourself and allowing yourself to say, hey, I need help, I'm not okay, or I can't do this, or I'm struggling with this.
Yeah.
I don't like to say I can't, but sometimes you really can't.
Oh yeah. man, I'm so glad you said yeah. that, because oh, I think that's such a thing where like somehow it feels shameful to say I can't, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in a certain way, it takes so much more courage to
yeah.
say I can't.
Yeah.
It requires so much faith and vulnerability to say I need help. I need help.
Mm.
I need help.
Yeah. Yeah. The asking for help, I think, is just generally hard, I think, for most people.
Mm-hmm.
It also comes with this, I mean, sometimes you're not going to get the help.
Yeah.
And then
sometimes you don't.
Yeah. Coming to terms with that, like,
yeah.
The amount of times as a mom, for example, that I am like, no, I really need help with this. And people being like, you got
no,
this,
bitch.
You're so strong. And I'm like, no, I'm saying I need help. Yeah.
It's like, no,
somebody please help me.
Yeah.
And, and like,
you got
nobody
this.
Really getting
okay?
it.
Yeah. That's actually not helping me. That's what yeah. I'm telling you.
No, I don't got this. I don't.
Yeah.
So there's also that balance, that being able to be vulnerable and being able to come to terms with sometimes that you're not going to have that need met in whatever way.
In that way. Yeah. yeah. One of the things I'll often say to my clients is when we talk about asking for help, I'll always say, okay, now what are you going to do if they say no? or what are you going to do if they disappear, right? I was just talking to a client who was like, oh, I found this great organizer. She's helping me with XYZ. She's a little bit flaky. And I'm like, okay, what are you going to, like, what's your plan B? Because it is true that sometimes to get your needs met, you have to ask more than once. Mm-hmm. And you have to ask more than one person. And if you're an ADHDer and it's already killing you to ask for help, and you already have a hard time thinking your way through the pathway to asking for help, mm-hmm. the idea of doing it again is like, can be overwhelming.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I would love to be able to afford to have somebody to do meal prep, for example.
Yeah.
And okay, so I can't do that. I can't afford that right now. So what do I do? How do I work around that? Yeah, I can ask so-and-so for help, but I feel like a lot of people, especially when you are a neurodivergent person and surround yourself with neurodivergent people, you find like that they're the greatest, most loving and empathetic, kind, generous people.
Yes.
Who often overextend themselves.
Yes.
And like, I know I'm guilty of it, which is why I can confidently say that.
Yeah.
Saying like, yeah, I'll be there and I'll hang out and do this. But it's usually either I really can't do it and I have overbooked myself or double booked myself or something, or sacrificing something that I really, really need to do in order to do that. So also like finding the balance between being there for people and being a good whoever and allowing yourself to say, no, I really need to do this for me.
Yeah.
That's something I'm really trying to come to terms with now. Like, even if this person isn't going to show up, I still have to do whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still have to fold that damn laundry.
Yeah. Exactly.
This has been such a great conversation because I feel like so many people really just don't get it and don't realize how, even though we are not neurotypical, how common the things that we struggle with are within our neurodivergent peeps, and how like not everybody's ADHD looks the same way. And that even though there are things that it's like, oh yeah, I know what that's like, it still might be different for you. And like being able to talk about all those things and bring about awareness to all those things and how important it is for people to know that, yeah, we're weird and that's awesome.
That's right. We're weird and that's awesome.
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
If there was one thing that you could leave my listeners with, what would be that one thing that you would want to leave them with out of everything else?
Love this question. And I mentioned it before, and that is self-love. The importance of self-love. And the idea that self-love is going to be, it's a lifelong practice. You're never going to get done with it. It's not a destination or a goal to get to. It's a North Star. It's a direction to set your compass toward and just keep moving toward it. And just like at any moment in your life, no matter where you are, for example, you could turn to face east. In the same way, at any moment in your life, you can turn and orient yourself towards self-love. What would be the most loving and compassionate thing for me to do in this moment for the organism that is my body, for the living being that is myself?
That's awesome. I love that you elaborated on the North Star thing, because that's like, it's always there.
It's always there.
It's not a destination. It's always there. I love
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure. I love talking to you, Tara.
As we wrap up today, I just want to take a moment to thank Emma. I cannot thank you enough for joining me and sharing your world with us. Your insights about ADHD are not just informative, but I hope that they are a real game changer for anyone who listens. I know that our conversations have definitely been a game changer for me. And to all of you tuning in, you guys are the best. I appreciate your support and curiosity so much. They are what makes Tea Time with Tara so special. So thank you for being here and listening and for being part of these important conversations, especially those of you who see me out in the wild and have actual chats with me about the show. I love that so much. I cannot tell you enough. A quick shout out to Feral Mama Shop. It's a cool mom-owned boutique with some quirky stuff for your spooky side, for the spooky ghouls in your life. So check it out and use the code Tara, that's T-A-R-A, to snag a 15% discount on your order. The link is in my bio on Instagram. Also, keep an eye on my Instagram at teatime.tara. I've got some exciting news to share about another brand partnership coming up, and although I cannot spill the beans quite yet, I am really, really excited about this one. Until next time, let's keep changing the world one conversation at a time.